Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser said it all.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode. How's everybody doing out there? I'm doing well. On this episode, my guest is Sick Boy. We talk about The Flock, Raven, The Power Plant, and much more. That is coming up very soon. Remember, on November 8th, I will be attending the Coastal Wrestling Federation show called Overload in Milton, Florida. So if any of you listeners are in the area, come and say hi. What wrestling is everyone out there watching? Are you watching something new, something classic, going to any live events? Let me know on social media what you've been viewing. And remember, if you're looking for something to watch, you can always check out the classic WWE wrestling on my YouTube channel. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, I will have my interview with Sick Boy. Phil Singer Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is PhilSingerGames, PhilSingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. At this time, I'm being joined by a former member of Raven's Flock and WCW, Sick Boy. Sir, how are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. So let's talk. You were trained in the WCW Power Plant. So what were you doing prior to that?
I'm finishing up a football career.
Okay.
Yeah, I had been coming out of college. I got injured and kind of delved into the NFL for a bit just to kind of test the waters, but my injury was pretty severe, so it was kind of like the Rocky III for me, like the whole psychological losing the eye, the tiger, and the focus. And
yeah,
but the NFL was my ultimate dream that I wanted to do. And once that was over, and I kind of realized that, hey, I'm not there physically like I used to be. That's when wrestling came into play for me.
So then how did that connection happen? How did
How did you go from that realization to entering the power plant?
That went back to high school. I was a fan growing up of wrestling, and I had gone to a house show, a WCW house show in Savannah, Georgia, and I was there with Sean O'Hare.
Okay.
We went to the same high school together, and we went to the house show, and Gary Michael Capetta, the ring announcer, saw us at intermission and came up to us and asked, he said, "I'm just not a ring announcer, but I'm also a talent scout as well." And asked if we would meet him. And I met him. I think Sean didn't meet with him. Sean wasn't very interested in that at that time. He had just kind of started getting into like mixed martial arts and working out at that time. And so he didn't have a lot of interest there. I did. I was just, I'm curious. I want to see what he has to say. And I wanted me to come up after high school to train in Atlanta to wrestle. And I was just like, oh, that's all, that's really awesome. But, my goal is to go play college and go to the NFL. And he basically was like, "Hey, well, hey, here's my card. If anything ever changes, anyways." And that was what led me to the power plant.
So when you go into the power plant, at that time, tell us about the power plant. Who's training you? Who else is in that class with you training? Tell us about the situation while you're in the power plant.
The trainers at that time were Mike Winter, Pez Watley, Sarge, Dwayne Bruce, and Jody Hamilton ran it.
Okay.
And so I went up to Atlanta. I actually went. I took my roommate from college that played with me at South Carolina, and he went with me and was gonna go, was gonna see if we could get him in there, because I mean he was 6'6", 300 pounds, and so they had at that time. I went there in '96, the summer of the Olympics in Atlanta, actually where Kurt Angle, where he won his gold. But WCW had moved their base of operations to Orlando for the summer, just to get out of downtown Atlanta and the hectic mess that was the Olympics. So when I got there, they were like, of course, well, like said, Michael Capetta wasn't with the company any longer, and they said, "Well, we want to put you through a series of workout, some exercises to see what kind of athlete you are." And I did that, and they're like, "Hey, you look really good. You're what we're looking for, what we're wanting to do. We can't sign it. We can't give you a contract right now," kind of thing. Like the with the office being not there. I don't know. It's just a lot of kind of dragging feet stuff. And so we ended up, and that's when I was like, we went through the power plant, the infamous workout that they had for 3 days. That was just the most agonizing thing I'd ever done in my life. We ran through that for 3 days, and at the very end of it, they still weren't doing anything contract wise. Like there really wasn't anybody there. It was really just Mike Winter and Pez Watley running the school.
And you debuted September 96 as Lance Ringo. Was that just a kind of a placeholder name, or what? Did they have some idea what was going on? What was being communicated to you when you make that debut?
Nothing. Zero. I had no idea it was happening. Until the night before, Sunday night, 9 o'clock, I was out to dinner, and got a call from Dom Dallas Page that I was going to be wrestling him on Monday night. I had, I mean, I was so green. I had just gotten trunks. That was the only thing I had. I had no boots. Obviously didn't have a name because I didn't come up with that name. I literally had nothing because I hadn't even, I haven't even, I had not, I might have worked one match at like a high school. Other than that, I just worked matches down at the power plant with like Chris Kanyon, Billy Kidman. And that was pretty much it. And so, yeah, I didn't know a thing other than I'm flying to, I think it was Roanoke. I'm flying there. And when I get there, it's, you know, Paige coming up with a name. And he wanted to actually do, what was, Johnny Ringo, and in correlation with Wyatt Earp. That was his reasoning. And going just, oh, let's just have a name. You want something that people recognize. And I'm like, I don't know how many people will recognize that. It's not like it's Wyatt Earp. You know, if you're a history buff, which I was, and familiar with the movie, I knew exactly who it was, but I was just like, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of questioning. So we kind of went back and forth, and Paige can be a very influential in the way he wants things to go, not
There
only
you
for
go.
himself, but for
There you
you.
go. Yeah.
And somehow we kind of got around to Lance, and I was just like, well, this isn't going, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Let's just do it. I was more stoked, like, hey, I'm going to be on Nitro.
Right, yeah.
And I'm like, and I at this point, I'm just going, ah, this isn't exactly what I had in my mind in terms of debuting, but you know, it's an opportunity. And, you know, obviously, you know, grateful to Paige for thinking of me to want to do it. But not really the debut that I really wanted. So that's pretty much Lance Ringo in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, and a couple of months later, right, November, you wrestled as a sick boy, and you were revealed to be a member of Raven's Flock. So let's break that down a little bit, and let's whatever. So first, how were you approached about joining the flock?
Through Chris Kanyon. Rave had signed, and Chris was like, of course, everybody, like, to put it into context, Chris Kanyon, Ray Lloyd, Brian Clark, who was Atom Bomb and Wrath, Billy Kidman, and some other guys were all really tight. And they were all really tight with Paige. And so I got brought into that group through Canyon. Canyon saw me working at the power plant and was just like, saw how fast I was picking things up. And it just really was natural for me. And he was like, you know, come down and work with us. 'Cause they were there at the power plant at the time I was there working on the Glacier gimmick, the Mortal Kombat deal. And he saw me, and he said, man, you're just so much more advanced than these other guys. It's just going to slow you down. Come work with us. And that was my in. And I, you know, I had no idea the, you know, that Chris was good friends with Paige and Kidman, who, of course, Kidman went on to be in the flock. So I had that in with Canyon, and Canyon was like, he said, you know, Rave's looking for, you know, he's going to put a flock together, kind of what I guess what he had, Raven's Nest, I think, in ECW. And he said he wants, you know, new guys that hasn't, you know, that have not been seen. And he said, you're perfect for what he's looking for. So that was Chris's suggestion. And from what I remember, Rave came down to the power plant, watched me work, we talked, and that was the introduction. And from, I mean, I think right there it was pretty much a go. It just had to get approved. So, you know, it went a few weeks or so before it got from the higher ups that, yeah, you were in.
So
So.
how much input and control did Raven have on the flock? And you said he came down, talked to you, watched you work out. So, I mean, did he have some creative input onto who would be in the flock and his character in group direction?
Yeah, as far as I know, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty much he had a good bit of influence in terms of what he was doing with his character. Now, he didn't get everything he wanted.
Of course.
Because I don't think it would have gone the way that it went.
Yeah, right.
I mean, just not for him, but for the entire entity of the flock.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know. I've seen Eric talk like I it's hard to have a character and have it progress when the guy in charge is going, I don't understand the character.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I just don't get it. And this is just coming from some of the interview, like I've seen like some of the stuff Eric Bischoff has done on his podcast
Sure.
where he was just talking about he couldn't relate to the character, and he was kind of questioning how is the audience going to relate if I can't relate,
Yeah.
which I don't know, is pretty weird because we were pretty over.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean,
Yeah.
we had some pretty good heat.
Yeah. So who
So
came
I,
out?
you know,
Oh, go ahead.
no, but yeah. So I, you know, he, I don't know how much control Raven had, but he had a good bit. Like I said, and in terms of who he wanted in there, I mean, pretty much everybody he wanted, he got.
Yeah. Well, and obviously he ended up having some frustrations, and we'll get to that a little bit. But who came up with the name Sick Boy? What's the meaning behind that name?
Raven did. We were doing some research for the flock at Canyon's place, and we were watching the movie Train Spotting,
Okay.
and a character in there, Johnny Lee Miller played the character Sick Boy,
Gotcha. Okay.
and we were watching this just to get some kind of idea for the group and some perspective on the direction we're gonna go. And we're just sitting there, and Rave was just pretty much like, because I mean, nothing had been talked about what I was going to look like, what I was going to, there no talk. I just knew I was in. And watching that movie, he just said, oh, he goes, Scott, you're Sick Boy. That's a perfect name. Perfect name for you. You're Sick Boy. So
Okay.
from there on out, I was Sick Boy.
There you go. So when developing that character and everything, how much of the person Scott Vick did you get to put into Sick Boy? Was there some correlation? Was Scott Vick a
There was, I'm
grunge
no, not really, but
guy?
aspects of kind of just, you know, I don't know, I didn't get to develop the character the way I wanted to.
Right.
They just didn't give us a lot
Absolutely.
individually.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was Raven's show, you know, and it was all focused around getting Raven over. And I think everybody knew that. And I mean, I didn't have a problem with that at all because I'm like, you know, I'm 24, 25 years old. This is my first, you know, I'm we're on TV every week. We're doing every live show, every tape show, a lot of house shows, and every pay-per-view. And this is a great platform for somebody that has done nothing in the business.
Sure.
So, but me personally, I mean, I just looked at it as, you know, I can be a little bit reserved. You know, I'm kind of quiet. I'm not the guy that's going to walk into the room and everybody's going to be like, oh, Scott's here.
Yeah.
In terms of just, you know, I'm not that social butterfly kind of. I'm more sit back, quiet, observe the room, listen to people, just figure out who's cool, who's not, who I'm going to talk to, you know, kind of thing. Not that I'm going to be an ass to anybody, but just, you
Right.
know,
Yeah.
that's kind of more of my personality. But yeah, no, the whole look, I'm like, okay, this is. You know, I loved the from the grunge aspect. You know, huge Allison fans chain Alice in
Alice in
Chains
Chains.
fan. So,
Yeah.
you know, yeah, Alice in Chains. You know, huge fan of them. So, liked a lot of, you know, like a lot of the music. So familiar with it, and so I just was like, hey, you know, I get the look. I literally had to come up with something that would set me apart because I was kind of told, I'm not kind of told, I was explicitly told, if I don't do something different than everybody else, I can be gone just as quick as I got there.
Yeah.
which kind of miffed me because I'm like, nobody's really doing anything different other than just at that time. Because really, at that time for me, Stevie Richards had just left, and at that time it was really it was just me, Kidman, because me and Kidman got introduced at this almost at the same time. And then it was Raven and Saturn. And everybody was just kind of sitting there, like, because my first introduction to doing anything TV wise with the Flock was at MGM Studios. And we were doing pre-tapes there. And, they just had chairs sitting out ringside for us. And they're like, well, we sit in the chairs. And that's what everybody was doing. And we did that for the whole week. And then when we went to Tampa for Nitro, and I get called up into the rafters of the arena with Eric Bischoff and Diamond Dallas Page. And that's where I was told, hey, you need to do something different from everybody else. Because just as fast as you got in this spot, you can be out of it. And so I was at that point, I was like, okay, what can I, like I said, I'm sitting there kind of going, oh, why am I getting drawn out on this? I mean, everybody's kind of doing their same thing. I've had no time to develop anything. I mean, when I went down, got the call for, I mean, like when I got the go ahead for going to be in the Flock, it was about a week and a half before I had to go get a look together before I was going to be in MGM Studios. So I had no time to like prepare anything. It was like, I just kind of went, I didn't get to really think in terms of, okay, what I want, how can I be different? What could I do? I was like, well, look, I'm just going to get cut off jeans and get some cool shirts and, kind of go that route and I'll figure this out as I go. So that night at Nitro, when I got told that, I'm like, well, let's, what can I do? And I needed something quick. I knew I wasn't working in the ring that night. I knew we were going to be sitting ringside, so I was like, well, I'll just sit in the floor. Everybody else will be sitting in the chair, and when we go out ringside, I'll just sit in the floor. That's when I put my hands to the guardrails and I just kind of sat there. And that was the start of it. That's kind of where the wheel started going in my head, where I was like, all right, what else can we do here besides this? Like, how different can you be in the ring entrance wise? And that's where I kind of started thinking, maybe I could be this Cactus Jack, Mankind kind of a deal. Not to that extreme, but just kind of maybe hearing voices. That's why, a lot of times when I'd walk out, I'd look up to the rafters and turn around and I'd mumble to myself like somebody's talking, or in some of my matches, I'd chew on the rope or do something where I was just kind of, almost like a maybe a little dash of Bruiser Brody in there, some of those guys that were, John Nord with the whole Berserker kind of thing. So I was like, that was kind of the foundation for it for me and where I wanted to take it. That was the initial.
And a lot of people that look back on this time talk about the Flock being underutilized, right? That you guys were getting over, things were developing as a group. I think Raven was super over. What did you think at that time? How did you guys, as in your bubble, in your circle, what were you thinking and hearing? Did you think you were being underutilized? Were you getting
Yeah,
frustrated?
everybody did. I think everybody in the group, but everybody knew it was, obviously it was, it's Raven's flock. So it's his, and we're there to enhance that. And it was really a springboard for a lot of us. Even Kidman had done some stuff, with WCW prior to. I think he'd worked just as Billy Kidman. Mainly like I think just enhancement type work. And it was really only Perry and Ray with any real clout, in the group. So I mean everybody kind of knew that, but then once we started kind of building and getting momentum, Yeah, I kind of started to, everybody kind of started to talk amongst themselves, like, and we really felt like, why aren't we getting a little more of a push? I mean, everywhere we went, I mean, it was like, when we would enter from like a corridor, I mean, the whole arena would stop and turn and start booing us.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I got tobacco juice spit on me. We got rolls of quarters thrown at us. We got batteries thrown at us. Obviously a bunch of name calling and, and that kind of stuff. We also got people to buy us beer, which was pretty cool. So there were some fans that were cool like that, but we had a lot of heat.
Sure.
Actually, I think Lodi probably had more more heat than or as much as Rave or anybody with the signs. So yeah, I think everybody kind of started feeling like, especially the I to me, in my opinion, is when Kevin Nash took over the booking where it really started, and that's where we were starting to kind of transition. Of I think the talk started about the breakup of the flock.
I mean, I was going to ask about that, right? Because another thing that people reflect on WCW, there's a lot of talk about locker room politics, right? And people having creative control and flexing this and flexing that, being in Eric's ear, blah, 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 right? How much did you or the flock experience, right? Because you're kind of organically getting over as heels in this group, getting some natural reactions. How much of the locker room politics do you feel was kind of holding you back, and guys flexing that muscle to stay in their spots?
I personally didn't see a lot of it. It was, you're hearing it from Rave, because he had frustrations a lot of times, and there were issues, there were instances where, when Kevin Sullivan was booking, I had a match, supposed to have a match, and this was the night of the infamous DX. When they showed
Oh,
up in
the
Virginia
tank. Yeah.
with the tank thing,
Yeah.
I was supposed to have a match with Marty Jannetty, and I was gonna go over that night. And I got there and got told that, and then it came back. They killed the match completely, and I don't. The only thing I really got out of that was there was. Somehow I was a Diamond Dallas Page guy. Kevin didn't like Page, or they had something going on.
Okay.
And I don't know if Marty didn't want to, do the favor. I don't know. There, it was like this mixture of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really my first time experiencing like the politics of things.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was so green. And I was so naive in a lot of it. I think I was still like this football mentality. Hey, if you're good, you're good. They're going to put the best people out there. Like,
Yep.
you would think it'd make sense,
Sure.
because it's what I do. If I'm running things and hey, you and I are best friends and you're just not that good of a, I'm not going to put you in a spot just because we're buddies. If you're good enough to be on TV, yeah, I'll give you whatever I can give you, but I'm not going to sacrifice somebody, somebody else for you, that's better just because we're buddies. That happened a lot.
And
I
you
mean,
said,
that's happened throughout the history of the business.
right, and you said Kevin Nash taking over was a big blow to the flock.
I think I think it was. I mean, again, that's just my opinion. I never had any personal issues with Kevin. I never had anything, not that we hung out a ton, but I saw him, every week. Multiple times a week, and hey, what's up, and everything, and I just know that's when it shifted. And it could have been, Terry Taylor was on that booking committee, and I think I know me personally, Terry was in my corner and really liked what I could do and liked my work and really pushed to get me. I mean, the couple wins I got on or on Nitro were Terry Taylor. My win against Lenny Lane on Nitro, Mark Starr on Nitro, and then what would have been Marty Jannetty. And then I think I got a Thunder one somewhere in there. But like even with Goldberg, I mean, Terry was like he booked a lot of those matches I did with Bill. And he loved the my size and my athletic ability that I could do all the springboard stuff. And I remember I think it was either Philly or like somewhere in Massachusetts. It was a Thunder, and I was working Bill again, and he goes, "Hey, this time when you hit him with that springboard drop kick, get a two count on it. Cover him and get a two count." And nobody had covered Bill and gotten a, I don't even know if they had covered him yet, and gotten a two count to boot. So I was like super, I was like, okay, and this was Terry. And that's how we had the match, but unfortunately, I springboarded up and I slipped on the top rope. Because everybody loved to put on a lot of baby oil and this stuff called hot stuff that would bring your veins out and everything. And those ropes would get pretty greasy. And yeah, in that match, you can see I completely bust. And yeah, that was big time disappointing because I was like, I remember being like super excited. I'm like, wow, I'm going to be like the first guy to get a legit cover on Bill. But I'm just. Going back to that, to what we were talking about earlier, like I said, I think Terry was a big, a big part of my being pushed, and he tried to push me as much as he could. And then you get some of these politics in there, and things start going on. And I don't know, there could have been a lot of other stuff that goes on. From I could see Raven rubbing some feathers the wrong way.
Because Raven's he's known for that, right? I mean, he I love Raven. I'm a big fan of Raven, but Raven says what he thinks and does what Raven wants to do, and sometimes that's right, and that's not it didn't work for him. And therefore, by proxy, right? Again, this has all been dissected so much, right? Those final years of WCW, too many cooks in the kitchen, right? This and that. I mean, who knows? Who knows? But right, you spoke, right? Kevin Nash may have had an issue with Diamond Page because Raven and the Flock and you were Diamond Page guys. Maybe
Would have
Nash
been
didn't.
Kevin Sullivan. Like Kevin Nash and Page were good friends.
Okay, right. So I'm sorry. You're Sullivan,
Yeah,
right?
Kevin. Yeah, Kevin. Like I think there was. I mean, that's what somebody had said to me. It was like, you're a Page guy, and at that point there, I think there was some issue there or something. I don't know.
And who knows,
I
right?
tried to stay out of that as much as
Yeah.
I could.
Right. And WCW also had such a huge roster. I mean, everybody's fighting for TV time. And it's just, I mean, there, again, there's so many, there's a lot of problems with that time
There's
period.
huge problems, and I none of us could really get it because I know there were rumors going around even about jealousy from the NWO perspective with how much heat we were getting because there were no other factions in WCW. You had like at the beginning there was still the Horsemen, but I can't remember at what point. I mean, they kind of just started to kind of get. I think it just kind of leveled out a bit with them, and it was really just, I mean, the biggest factions in there were NWO and the Flock, and I remember hearing through the grapevine that they were talking. I think the initial plans were to have the Flock go against NWO. And I don't know, I couldn't tell you why or if that word was legit, but that was the word on the street. But there was a lot of speculation that we were getting a lot of heat and kind of taking some of that heat away.
Well, it's
And
again,
whether that's true
it's
or not, I don't know, but that's just what was heard.
yeah, again, it's there's so many elements, right? In those last years of WCW, right? So many people with creative control in their contracts and buddying up to Eric, whatever it might be. I'm not whatever. There was a lot of stuff at play. But ultimately, we get down to Fall Brawl 1999. The Flock disbanded. When that idea is developing, right, of, okay, we're breaking up the Flock, we're doing away with it, was anybody saying anything to you personally about what you were going to do post-Flock? Was there any plans for you? Was anybody communicating anything to you at that time?
No. The only thing I got, we were gonna split. I was gonna be off TV for 90 days, and I needed to come up with a character, I guess.
Okay.
Because no one really said, like, oh, you need to come up with your own character. It's kind of like, oh, we're gonna repackage you. You're gonna be off TV for 90 days. That was literally the only thing that was said to me. So I'm kind of like, at this point, I'm like, that's really when things started creeping in my head. Like, do I need to be here any longer?
Gotcha.
Like, I don't see how this is going to be advantageous for me in any form or fashion. If this is all you can give me, the thought is going to split up. They can't go, hey, here's what we're going to do with you. Or here's what we have in mind. Or, you know, I had to come up with an idea. I had to come up with a look. I did all that. I basically just confirmed once we did that last, I think it was after that pay-per-view, the last Nitro, I confirmed with them. I said, so I'm finished after tonight. Yeah, you're done. And so I said, okay, so for 90 days, I'm done. Yeah, we'll be in touch, this, that, and the others. And yeah, they were in touch the following Monday, with Paige calling me at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, asking me where I was at. And I'm like, yeah, bro, I'm at home, man. And he goes, well, we got a match tonight on. And I said, no, I said, well, I confirmed with multiple people. And then the people I needed to confirm with, I made sure I double checked. I'm off. I'm done. I'm not going to be next week. You're off. And that was the confusion. So now it starts running even faster in my head. Like, dude, this ship is like going to be sinking soon.
Yeah.
You know, the proverbial Titanic. We're heading right for the iceberg.
Well, I was good to ask, right? Because after the breakup, right, you start wearing more traditional. When you do on TV, come back on TV, you're wearing more traditional attire. You dye your hair blonde. But you're kind of lost in the shuffle, right? And everything's too many cooks in the kitchen, right? Did you sense, hey, my time with this company may be coming to an end?
Yeah, absolutely I did. Because before I did, I think once the Flock split, I did a couple matches because I think I worked Perry.
Yeah.
I did, me and Scotty Riggs did a lot of house shows against each other.
Yeah.
So I mean that, yeah, my memory's fuzzy on the timeline on it, but there for a while before it was officially like done, and I still was in the Flock gear before I went home for those 90 days.
Sure. Yeah.
And I remember just going, because I think I worked I think the last match I worked in the Flock gear was with Scott Steiner.
Okay.
And I just remember having a couple matches and I was like, I went to the announcers and I said, you know, just to protect myself, I was like, I need to do something. I said, hey, they had set it up with Perry to go, hey, everybody, you know, Perry was telling everybody, you could be so much better without Raven. Mm-hmm. And he gave a little, you know, a little synopsis on all of us and what we can do and what our abilities are and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know what? I want to go in the opposite direction. I want to be the one guy that's lost.
Okay.
Because Kidman immediately kind of started going right into, he was still in the Flock gear, but he changed his attitude and started doing, you know, Hammer had already, I think split before, if I remember correctly.
Maybe, yeah.
Because I think there was a whole, wasn't there like a something, some Perry versus Saturn, somebody's out of the, I don't know. They did something, because I'd worked Hammer on a Thunder, I think. And I know Horace, but they toyed with stuff so much on who was in and who was out there at the end before it became official.
Right.
And I just I told Mike Tenay and Tony Schiavone, I said, look, on these matches, I go, I just sell it as I'm lost. Like I'm this lost soul without Raven. Like I want to be the one guy that's kind of like I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Yeah.
And I said that's just gonna pr protect me, and it did because the last, like I said, the last couple matches I had, they were just like, don't get any offense in. Like it was like let them eat you up, and I was just like, that's when I really just was like, yeah, this isn't too promising.
Yeah. But there was so much potential, right? Coming out of that flock disbanding thing of, I mean, who knows? I mean, feuds of this, of you guys within that group, kind
Yeah.
of lost without Raven, feuding with each other. I mean, there's so much they could have done.
So much they could have done with it. And that's why I thought, okay, maybe if I say this, that might spark something and going, hey, if I can create a storyline for myself
Yeah.
and go, hey, he's lost. And then we do something. But see, they just weren't into doing anything like that, especially with younger talent.
Sure. Yeah.
Everybody was making the money they were making. They were making a lot of money. I mean, my gosh, Kevin Nash was getting his guaranteed money for his wrestling. Then he was also getting an astronomical amount of money for just booking.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
mean, it was like, it wasn't Eric's checkbook, it was Ted Turner's checkbook. And Eric pretty much could go in there and write whatever checks he wanted because Ted Turner's biggest mission and Eric's biggest mission was to put Vince out of business,
Right.
which how ironic that was,
Yeah.
or it turned out to be. And so I, Ted Turner basically gave him an open checkbook. I mean, I went into Eric's office and asked for more money when I started with the flock, and he was like, how much do you want?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like no negotiation, really.
Yep.
And I wish I would ask for a lot more.
Sure.
But yeah, but it was like,
Yeah.
and a lot of these other guys, I mean, they were making almost $1 million a year, or some were making over that, and it was guaranteed money.
That's right.
And I
Yeah.
mean, I get, I'm not going to make that kind of money. I wasn't expecting to make that kind of money.
Yeah.
Your Bret Harts and your guys that have been there, and your Scott Halls and Nash and Hogan. Yeah, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
Slayers, they're going to make that money.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was just there was just no direction there. It was like a ship without a rudder
Yeah.
or an engine. And it was like, just don't think they really cared. Of course, there was rumors about, I think the rumors had even started about AOL purchasing
Yeah, the Time Warner stuff.
wrestling.
Yeah.
The dichotomy was so weird because I don't know. I could never figure it out because TNT and I mean, Ted was the only reason WCW existed and lasted was because of Ted Turner.
Sure, right?
All of his board members, none of them liked wrestling. They thought it was ridiculous. And listen, which was so crazy because WCW and the Nelson ratings were like number one or number two on TV. I think Thunder was fourth or fifth in the ratings. I could be wrong, but they were up that the Thunder was up there too. We had two of the highest rated shows on TV during that stretch, during that whole Monday Night War stretch, during the whole NWO run. And see, that's another thing. I think once that huge tidal wave of NWO started to that tsunami started to kind of
Calm
filter
down.
down, now it came down to writing and creativity. And I think that's really where it just went out the door. And there wasn't a lot of thought. They tried to do it because they had shifted when I got finally was off TV before I came back with the blonde hair and trunks and boots, which that 90 days turned into 6 months. I was getting word and contacted by Jimmy Hart. And the idea was to make Saturday the Saturday night tapings more geared towards younger talent development. And Jimmy Hart was pretty much in charge of gonna be in charge of all that.
All right.
And they wanted to leave like it was almost like a pre-NXT kind of thing, really.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like you learn and work on Saturday nights and then you get up to the live shows.
Right.
I think that was the thought process they were wanting to do at the time.
Yeah.
And of course then a lot of the veteran guys were like, you know, they're getting paid regardless of how many days a year they work.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, we're just going to do pay-per-views, live shows, and then house shows Saturday night. All these tapings will be for young guys and start bringing that up. That's what was explained to me by Jimmy Hart.
Okay.
Because I had a lot of connection with Jimmy Hart through those 6 months because yeah. I would get flown out when I finally told them the character I wanted to do and the look I was going for. They were seemed at the time to be all about it, and I would fly out to do a vignette or something on the character or to start work, and then I'd get there and they would go, oh, we don't have enough time to do it, we can't get to it right now. I'd turn around and fly back home, and I did that for about out of the 6 months. I probably did that for about 2 months,
yeah,
maybe 2.5 months, yeah. So it was just. And then of course all that stuff I had been thinking earlier of, you know, that I'm on the Titanic and that iceberg's getting really close.
Yeah,
I can see it.
Yeah,
and that's when I started in my mind going, you know what, it's time for me to jump ship.
Yeah, and you did right in '99. You went to WWE and mostly appeared on Heat and Metal. So tell us about that jumping ship from WCW. How did that develop? What happened there in that process?
Well, first, I never was on Heat or Metal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I never recorded anything, any tapings or live with WWF at all, or okay. WWE at all.
Okay, yeah.
I had prior to WCW, before I signed with WCW, I was rooming with Matt Wiese.
Okay.
Who went on to be Horseshoe and Luther Reigns.
Yep, gotcha.
He was Horseshoe in WCW and then Luther Reigns in WWE.
Sure.
He and I were rooming together in Atlanta, and this was prior to getting a contract with WCW, and he was friends with Jack Doan, ref for WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having a show around Christmas, like early December, down in Daytona, and Matt was like, hey, let's roll down to Daytona and go see Jack. You know, I hadn't seen him in years or something. And, you know, I think they grew up together. And so we rolled down there, and that's when WWE first got interested in both of us.
Okay.
We were in the back and Vince came up to us and asked if we were workers and what we were doing. And we told him, hey, Matt's friends with Jack and yeah, we're training at WCW. And he goes, are you under contract? And we were like, no. And he said, well, can you put me a match together? I want to see some action with you guys. And so we went back to the power plant and we actually filmed at the power plant a match.
Okay.
Yeah. And sent it to New York, and within about about a week, Bruce Pritchard called us and they flew us up to Stanford. And we went and met with Bruce. We did another match for him there. And he was like, we want to sign you guys.
Okay.
And that was like, at that point we were like, wow, okay. We were both really feeling like, just not because they offered us first, had because to jump to it, WCW ended up and countered that offer.
Okay.
Obviously, because we went back and I told Paige and I said, look, they've offered us, and Paige said, well, before you sign anything, let me talk to Eric. And Eric talked to us, and we told him, hey, look, we're training, and you know, you haven't offered us anything. And WWF has, and we just want to be up front because we've been training at the power plant. And he countered the offer and was just like, no hard feelings, whatever direction you wanted to go. But this is on a Monday, and he said, our offer that I'm giving you is good until Wednesday. Now it was for more money than what WWF or WWE was offering. But Matt and I were still like, we felt like WWE was the place to be. And we just, I don't know. It was just a feeling. And I was like, I always kind of, when my gut tells me something, it's about 99% right. It hasn't failed me a lot. So the contracts ended up, they never got to us. We called Bruce and told him, hey, they've offered, because the contract's supposed to be there Monday or Tuesday. And we hadn't gotten them yet. It was actually really cool of Bruce, because Bruce told us, he said, look, he goes, to be honest, he said, we're not in the best shape right now, because Stone Cold was ringmaster at the time. This was right before Stone Cold hit, before Rock hit, before Hunter kind of really jumped into Hunter's, and went into his own and did his thing. They were just in that down phase. He said, your best bet is just to go ahead and sign with WCW. Now, if you get the contracts before Wednesday or Wednesday and you want to sign, obviously we want you. But if they don't get there, well, they ended up, I think they got there like that night. And come like midday, I think it was like 12, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, we're like, let's sign this. I'm not going to wait for, I don't want to wait for anything else. This is guaranteed money, guaranteed, spot. So let's lock this in. So that locked us in. So Bruce had said on that, when we were talking to him on the phone, said, look, whenever you're done there, he goes, you'll have a spot here if you want it. Now, again, that was almost 3 or 4 years prior. So you really don't know what can happen in that amount of time. The only thing I knew was that Terry Taylor had left and gone, and he was now booking with WWE. So yeah, I reached out to Terry and told him, hey, if I'm not with WCW, well, I have a spot there. And it was like, yeah, absolutely. Which I had also heard through the grapevine from Lodi, who was friends with Matt and Jeff Hardy, that Jim Ross was really high on me and liked my work, liked my look, liked what I could do. So that was pretty, that was a good confident booster. And of course, once I got released from WCW, I immediately flew up to WWF and met with Jim Ross and Bruce Pritchard.
So did you ever actually sign any kind of contract for WWE?
Oh yeah. That's when I flew up there, we didn't talk about any character stuff or what they wanted to do. It was really just negotiating a contract, and we worked out a regular booking contract for 3 years. And at that time, that was pretty much it. I literally flew up there, met with Jim Ross and Bruce and JR's office, worked out the contract, and then flew back home. And didn't hear anything from them. I think that was like October. Didn't hear anything from them until March.
So when Raven came into WWE around 2000, were you under contract at that time?
Yes.
Was there any talks of doing a flock type thing, you working back with Raven? Did that ever come
No,
up?
no. Not until a little bit later on, I kind of heard stuff, and it kind of ties in with the glorious Katie Vick story line.
Tell me about that.
But no, when he was there, I was kind of I think I was, again, kind of starting to like work my way out. There's just a lot of stuff going on there. Like when they purchased WCW, like originally when we finally did started talking about characters, they wanted to bring me in and introduce me as Val Venus's partner. That was going to be my debut, coming in and being like his understudy that ran him out of the porn business. And they wanted me to show up on the talk was having me show up at Nitro with a bunch of girls. And he see me in the crowd. And then we form a tag team. We start doing tag matches. And that's my intro. And then I turn on him and I go on my own. That's what was laid out to me. And then of course that ended because again, they were catching so much heat with that character.
Yeah.
And you know, because that's when they cut that character and put him into Right to Censor.
Yeah. So they wanted to make you the guy, Val
Yeah.
Venus's porno understudy.
Yeah.
What a
Yeah.
role.
I know, right? And what's crazy is I'm like I like that. I was like, I can work with this.
Sure.
This is I mean and Val was over. And I was like super stoked
Yeah.
about this. I'm like, my gosh, this would be awesome.
Yeah.
I can be this arrogant, smug kind of guy, not with him with the hello ladies and the deep and doing all that stuff they did. I was already thinking in my head, like, okay, I can kind of go a little bit different with this and kind of be this arrogant guy, like, he's passe,
Yeah.
he's old news, man. Like I, you know,
Sure.
I'm kind of riding his coattails into wrestling now. But I ran him out of one business. Now I'm gonna run him out of this. I think that was
Right.
the mindset of
Yeah.
what I was kind of hearing. And so when that ended, obviously that got put on the back burner.
Yeah.
And then from then on, it was any other ideas that they came up with me with creative, it because Vince had the final say so on everything.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And everything that they would bring to Vince that I knew of, that or at least that was told to me by some of the writers or they were like, yeah, Vince shot it down. Like he was just like, oh, I don't see that working for him. I don't want to do that with him. Let's wait. And that happened a few times. And it happened enough to where it kind of got up now to where we're starting to hear rumors that they're gonna buy WCW. And right before that, the next closest time I got to TV, they were gonna put me with the Big Boss Man, and we were going to be Vince's like private security.
All right.
Because Vince had all that heat stuff he was doing with The Rock and Austin, and he was, and it was like almost like pre-authority. And Vince was going to use us as I was almost going to be like, man, what was the deal with Roman Reigns and those guys, the group they debuted in,
The shield.
The Shield. It was literally almost like that, but we were going to be working for Vince
Vince. Yeah, okay.
and protecting Vince and doing things to mess up, like to throw a monkey wrench into The Rock and Austin's stuff that they were doing with Vince.
Some early corporation type thing, corporate things, right? I mean, corporation.
Yeah, really early, and it was going to be me, Big Boss Man, and one of the Dutt brothers. They were a tag team that had been in Memphis, and it wasn't Mike; it was Bo Dutt. And it was one. God, I don't know which WrestleMania. It was one in Houston, and we were supposed to debut that Monday. And Bo had gotten into some personal problem stuff at WrestleMania. And for whatever reason, instead of just doing the two of us, just Boss Man and myself, or adding somebody else, they just, I guess it was like too much. Obviously, WrestleMania is right. You're coming out of WrestleMania, going into that Monday night. And they're like, oh, we're going to put this on hold.
Okay.
And then it never went anywhere.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. And that was the last time it got
close.
Yeah, it got close. Other than I did have they tried to put me back with Val Venus again. Just kind of obligatory, like, tag match.
Oh, okay.
Which I had worked D'Lo Brown the night before. And I zigged when I should have zagged and took a clothesline into the head. Mm-hmm. And it really messed my neck up. Like, couldn't, you know, super stiff. Couldn't turn my neck.
Mm.
Really painful. Felt like I had a blowtorch going down my arm.
Yeah.
And I get to TV the next day, and they have me tagged on, I think it was like a Heat or Velocity, one of those shows. I can't remember
yeah.
what we filmed on what day. And it was going to be me and Val against the Headbangers.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh God, I can't move.
Yeah.
And again, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, you know, this is not really how I wanted to debut. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, whatever. We just got, you know, if you can go with it, go with it. But I was like, I can't move. And I looked at this as an opportunity where I go, if I go out there and I mess this match up, you know, I may not get another shot.
Sure.
And I can't move. And so it was kind of, I told him, I said, I can do the match. I'll do it. But I'm really stiff. And then Michael Hayes told me, said, look, don't worry about it. I think they ended up and put Stevie Richards with Val. And they said, oh, we'll do it next week.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, no big deal. It's just a taping. Well,
next week never
nothing
happened.
Ever came from that either.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't long after that is when they bought WCW.
Yeah. So later, when Raven's in like TNA and he's having that run, was there ever any contact from TNA
no.
to bring you in?
No.
No. So never any, let's kind of resurface the flock. Because he had a bit of a group, I think, in TNA, but never any contact for you.
No, nothing.
No. So around 2002, right, you stepped away from wrestling. What was that? Tell me about that time. What's going through your mind, right? 2002, the business is different.
Yeah.
What was, I mean, it's gotta be a struggle, right? Stepping away. What do you do? Tell me about that time period.
Yeah. I just started getting a really bad taste in my mouth for the business. Just all the ups and downs with these characters and things going on. And then with WCW being bought,
yeah,
I felt like a lot of the stuff I wanted to get away from now was coming over.
Yeah.
And I just, I had a lot, I had some stuff personally going on with my family I was dealing with, and I had a big distraction there. And the business was just, I was like, I just didn't feel like it was going anywhere positive for me at the time. And I was getting really disgruntled. My first son was on his way. And so there was that component there.
Sure.
And it just kind of, I don't know, it transpired into this snowball effect where I was just like, I kept feeling like I'm put on the back burner, put on the back burner. Now I'm even further back.
Yep.
On this back burner. And, I just really kind of got a sour taste in my mouth with the business.
Yeah. And by 2002, right, with WWE buying WCW, the options of places to work is pretty limited.
Yeah. It slimmed down. And I was just like, I don't know. I just felt, honestly, almost felt kind of, almost just kind of felt burned out with it.
Yeah. Did you have any trouble of, you know, washing your hands of the business, moving away? Because a lot of people do, right? Of leaving that business, transitioning to something else. Did you have any trouble?
I was like, I kept coming in and out of it. Like I didn't really, I think the last, I think it was early 2005, end of 2004 was the last I had dealings with WWE.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was kind of in and out. I had started a business in Atlanta. I was running, and that was a great distraction for me
Yeah.
at the time. And I was super busy, and I started it from scratch. So I had to do everything myself, and I didn't have a lot of time to really think about the business. I miss working
Sure.
because I love going out and working. I love to me it was an art, it was a science,
Right,
you
yeah.
know. And I love that whole going out and putting on a show for the crowd and being, of course, I want to make it think like, when I kick or hit, I want to make it think like, damn, did he really just hit him? Did he kick
Yeah.
him? Or
Yeah.
did he just really take that shot? Like, that's what I really loved. I loved putting together a really good match, having the ups and downs of the match. And, you miss that. I mean, it's hard not to, especially through WCW and even because, I was at the height of NWO and WCW. Then
Yep.
when I was in WWF, I had the height of the Attitude Era, and everywhere we went, we were selling out. So with even just house shows, I mean, we were selling out 15, 20,000 seat arenas for non-TV.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I mean, it's awesome working in those crowds, and then having to walk away from that. But like I said, I luckily at least had a distraction. And then just the whole yo-yo effect too, that didn't help. Of just feeling like I'm getting kind of jerked around,
Yeah.
with them and what they're gonna do. And like I said, I didn't it's almost like they played with me because they brought me back to do a, I kept talking. I was talking to JR before he relinquished the VP of Talent Relations to Johnny Ace.
Okay.
And JR's like, oh, we can bring you back. We're not going to be able to pay you as much. We can bring you back. So there was like talks of that. And it was like almost like they were dangling the proverbial carrot in front of me.
Yeah.
And not doing much. And I couldn't understand it because I'm sitting here going, I'm still at this time like 27, 28 years. I'm like, I'm young. I'm like, I'm still really green. And it's like considering the amount of matches and time that I had under my belt, damn it, I could work.
Yeah.
I just needed to, sharpen my skills a little bit more, get a little more time under my belt. Learn the business because I still, even going into to when I signed with WWE, I still didn't know a lot of the backstage politics in terms of just how you do certain the etiquette and stuff that you have
Right.
with people. So I was still really learning, but I was like, I thought there was just enough natural talent and potential there. That would develop into something. Like they would see that. And so that from that standpoint, that got very frustrating.
Right. So you mentioned your business, right? After you left wrestling, right? You did wrestle some matches here and there. Did
Yeah, I
you
did the
also?
Sean, they brought me back to tag with actually time with tag with Sean O'Hare.
Okay, and
And Sean
WWE.
O'Hare and I did a tag match, and this is when Johnny Ace was now in charge of talent relations. And after the match, he was like, "Man, y'all look really good together. You compliment each other really well. We want to start you on house shows." And I was like, "Great, that's awesome." He goes, "Well, I'll call you later in the week." And we touched base a couple times, and that just kind of led into, again, him not really answering calls. And I'm going, like, why are you gonna lie to me, bro?
Yeah.
But come to find out, that's what Johnny Ace was really best at.
Sure.
And so that got real frustrating because it was all this, yeah, no, we're gonna put you on house shows. And it's like, well, just I'm not, I don't even look, just pay me a nightly. I'm confident in myself. I know I can work. I know I can get over. Give me the opportunity, give me the platform, which you've never done. And
Yeah.
considering some of the gimmicks that they've put out there for people, and even after me or even at the same time, like the damn cheer squad that they were doing.
Yeah.
I'm like, and that's just the name one. I want to single them out, but there was quite a few things that it was like, you're going to give that an opportunity, but you can't come up with something for me.
Right.
Just do me a nightly. Let's see how it works. And if things start going, then we can look at signing a contract. And it's, again, I just felt like I was getting kind of strung along. And after that match that I did with Sean, I didn't hear anything for a few months. And then they were in Atlanta and called me, and I went and I worked a match with John Cena.
Oh, okay. What and then and said, I mean, are you also have you done some conventions, appearances, signings, things like that, also over the years?
What, during that time?
What? No, since then.
Oh yeah, after that, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't do a lot. I kind of once all that stuff, once I kind of really washed my hands of the wrestling aspect of it, I just stepped away completely for years
Okay.
and just stayed away from it. Because by the end of it, after the whole Katie Vick thing, I was like, this is it for me. I'm done. Because that was the most ridiculous thing I've ever
Yeah.
experienced.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, what about now? I mean, how you seem to kind of be getting back in touch with wrestling, right? What does that kind of look like for you, your involvement with the business?
For years, like I said, I've been out of the whole spotlight of post wrestling
Yeah.
and doing stuff. I would do some I would do you know I was good I'm good friends with Lodi, so he would reach out every now and then and be like, hey, you want to do a tag match with me for this independent promotion? I was like, yeah, sure, I go do that. It's just reminiscing because we traveled a lot together in WCW, so I would do some of that. And then here lately, it just was like, I think part of it is age
Yep.
and getting to a point where you're like, and honestly, I started seeing a lot of videos on the Katie Vick stuff.
Yeah.
Honestly, that was a big prompt for me because I was like, I want to get back into it. One, just I've got a pretty cool story to tell in terms of how I got in the business. The fact that I was getting paid by WCW, WWF at the same time.
Yep.
It was like almost like I was the guy that was supposed to go do something and never did.
Yeah.
I was like right there, and for whatever reason, never fulfilled the potential that I had,
Yeah.
at least in my mind.
Yeah. Well, you bring up Katie Vick a lot, so that's a, I guess that's a key pivotal moment for you, right? As far as the business goes.
Yeah, absolutely. That was like the final that one that was the final straw for me with the business.
Okay.
Just because after that match with John Cena, it was kind of the same thing again. Kind of, oh, we'll be a tut, let's do something. And nothing happened, and it was 10, it was like 10, 12 months, maybe a year after that match.
Okay.
I hadn't had any communication with them whatsoever.
Okay.
But a few months before that, I'm watching Raw and I'm seeing this Katie Vick. I'm going, why are they using my last name in this storyline?
Okay.
And I didn't watch wrestling a lot. I would peep in every now and then to see what was going on. Like I said, that sour taste in my mouth was so sour, I just didn't even want to watch it.
Yeah.
But every now and then I'd flip on just to see what's up. People I knew on there and friends with them wanted to see what was going on with them. And
Yeah.
I hear this Katie Vick, and I'm just like, why, out of all the names, why are they using my last name? I
Yep.
just thought it was really bizarre.
Yep.
And so I didn't reach out to anybody. I didn't, I just was thinking in my head. And then a few months later, again, it's almost like the Lance Ringo. I'm out to dinner, and now listen, I'm out of shape. I haven't been working out. I've done it my whole life. I'm now sitting at like 30 years old, and I'm like, I started training for football at like 15, and it's what I've been doing half my life. And I'm just like, oh, I don't care. I'm just going to get back and be a large mammal, and I'm going to eat and have fun. And I'm just tired of being in shape. And that's pretty much because I thought I was done, because I've been reaching out to them and hadn't heard anything back after the John Cena stuff, and was just like, okay, I'm done. Because I think 6 months had gone by. And then in another couple months, I heard the Katie Vick thing, but that didn't trigger anything in me. And so I'm sitting there at dinner, and I get a call from Howard Finkel to want to know if I could be in Canada on Monday, which is the next day. And I kind of heard through, because I kept in contact with some guys, that, and this is kind of going back when you asked about the Flock stuff. There had been some talk about maybe doing like a Flock thing, because Perry was still with WWE at the time. Raven was there. Kidman was there. So really, like, that nucleus of it that really started that whole thing was still there. And so there had been, like, I had heard some rumors, but again, it's just rumors. But I had no idea. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to turn down a payday. And I'm just curious to see what this is about. And I can go see some of the boys, this would be a good trip. And so get there. And of course, one of the first people I see is Raven. And I'm like, yeah, they just called me out of the blue. I said, has this got something to do like Flock? And of course, I knew that started the wheels in his head. And he went and investigated. And I did find out before they told me anything from Raven that, yeah, no, the Flock, that's like dead in the water. They're not any interest in that. And then somebody from the office approached me and they said, hey, we need you to come up and talk to Johnny Ace and some other, I can't remember who else, but they said, you're aware of the Katie Vick storyline. I'm like, yeah. And they said, well, we want you to be her brother. I'm going, wait a minute. I haven't heard from you guys in a year. And they're like, yeah, well, we got a pay-per-view coming up. They kind of skated around that and said, like, we got a pay-per-view coming up in a month, and we want you to, it was Kane and Triple H, and we want you to run down and interfere in that match. And once they said that, I went, I'm in. Like, who's gonna say no to that? This is main event, if not main event, semi-main event match. And so we cut the, they had me cut a promo on the Katie Vick situation as me being her brother. And they wanted it to be, they told me it's like the Chappaquiddick kind of deal with the Kennedys, where this accident happened and they're not really sure about the accident. Like, that's the mindset that they wanted me to be in. And so I cut this promo talking about how my sister was Kane's best friend in high school, and that he was this disfigured monster, and no one wanted anything to do with him, but my sister was the one that was always there for him. She stood up for him. They were best friends. They were this, they were that. And then that this accident happened, and what no one else knows is, like, now you betrayed that friendship and you took advantage of my sister. But the real question is, did you take advantage of her while she was alive or dead? And that was verbatim what they wanted me to, mainly inject, and that was the finish of the promo. And so we cut that promo, and I did have a dart match that night. And this is going to tie into me hearing some of the verbiage that I've heard from Bruce Pritchard, and mainly Bruce, on why they ended this storyline, which is what really stuck in my craw. But full disclosure, I was out of shape. I had ring rust. I mean, I hadn't worked a match in a year, maybe longer. I hadn't been working out. I was out of shape for sure. Probably did not look the best that I could have looked. And he blamed me for ending that storyline in his in the interview I saw with him, and saying that, you know, Scott Vick just wasn't up to, you know, his match. He came in for a tryout match, and he looked, you know, looked bad, and we ended that storyline. I'm like, bullshit.
Bruce, you're saying Bruce said
Bruce
this.
Pritchard, this was the interview he
Okay.
did on a
Okay.
podcast.
Okay.
And I was like watching that. I watched that and I go, bullshit. I go, that's the office's version of it. It's not, here's my version. Nobody knew I'd been out for a year,
Yeah.
my side of it, in terms of I'd been contact, like I didn't even know I was involved in this storyline.
Yeah.
And yeah, I might not have had the best match. I might not have looked good, but you know what? You give me 3 weeks, I'll be in good shape. Or matter of fact, you tell me even prior to that that because after that interview, I watched or read an interview that Tommy Dreamer did.
Okay.
And Tommy Dreamer was on the booking committee during that time.
Sure.
And somebody asked Tommy Dreamer about the Katie Vick storyline, because it's probably the most infamous storyline in wrestling.
Right, yeah.
And Tommy said, well, that's how they wanted to debut Scott Vick. And we were having a meeting about it. And Vince was like, let's debut Scott Vick this way. And Tommy Dreamer, I don't know who he said this, but he said somebody set up and said, hey, well, Vince, he ain't even with the company. Like Vince didn't even know I wasn't with the company anymore. Which
Okay.
is which is baffling to me because Vince knew everything.
Yeah.
And Vince was pretty much, I mean, from what I could tell and the interactions I had with Vince, he was pretty much into me and what I could do while I was there.
Okay.
So it was like how he couldn't know I wasn't there anymore kind of left me with a bunch of questions in my head. And Tommy Dreamer went on to say that that's how they wanted to debut me. And then the culmination of that storyline was to end at WrestleMania with me in a match against Hunter.
Okay.
And I'm
All right.
going, you got to be kidding me. WrestleMania, Hunter, and no one's going to smarten me up until the
Right.
day before I go to go do a cut a promo on my sister
Yeah.
that I'm involved in this storyline. Because
Yeah.
I guarantee you, at the start of this, when they started this whole thing, and they called me and said, hey, you're going to be a part of this, I would have looked like $1 million.
Sure.
Because I would have had plenty of time to get in shape.
Yeah.
So yeah, when, you know, so I'm sitting there and I read that from Tommy and I was like, man, I've never heard that before. And I was just like, my God, WrestleMania? That's how they want to debut me? Like, you know, that was huge. And but then I started getting more pissed thinking about the Bruce interview. And I'm the scapegoat for this whole thing. I'm like, no, I'm not the scapegoat. It was a shitty storyline. It was terrible.
Yeah.
You know, talking about necrophilia and all the junk that they did. I mean, it was embarrassing.
Yeah. So
And
they
it
had this
almost seemed like
idea,
in that,
right? They had this idea with
huh?
Katie Vick, right? So they used the Vick name
Yeah.
with the intent. They're already thinking of pulling you into this, but they don't smarten you up. They don't contact you.
No.
And they have this ideal in mind. When they get to that point, they bring you in. But they then Bruce says, well, we wanted to do this, but Scott Vick didn't produce. He
Yep.
makes you the fallout for the storyline, which it's a bad idea to begin with.
Yes.
Yeah. And but Tommy says, well, there were bigger plans. It is weird, right? The whole thing
It's
of
super. Like I still can't. Like I would love to sit down with people and figure this out. I mean, I know they don't care, but for my like sanity,
sure.
it's like I want to. I'm like, you know, I don't understand that process and how
Yeah.
it, you know, how it got, you know, went to that. Especially coming from Bruce, because I. You know, we, like I said, we had a great relationship, at least the little bit that we had, you know, going way back to the very beginning, and he was always, like I said, out off the jump, really cool with us.
And
And
you
even though
gotta
my
think
time there
using
was really,
the Vic name that they could have given you a heads up, right? They would have,
well, yeah, they
you
could have
would
used any
think they
name
would
they
have
wanted.
caught.
Why did they use, yeah, why did they use
Sure.
my name?
So it's
It could have been Katie O'Donnell. It could have been Katie, Jackson. It
whatever.
could have been anybody that wasn't in the, but Vic is, it's not like that's the most common.
Right, it's not Smith.
Yeah.
And yeah, and they're so it does lean towards, right, they had some thoughts of what they wanted to do.
Yeah,
So
unbeknownst to me.
why did nobody reach out to Scott Vick?
Exactly. That's still a question for me to this day.
They
Why didn't
could.
anybody reach out prior to, not the night before?
Yeah.
And then,
Give you a
like,
heads up.
I think that pay-per-view was 2 weeks away because I went to, like, after I shot that promo in Toronto, I did, like, I showed up for two Raws. And it was on that second Raw where they said, hey, we're this storyline, we're going to end this after this match. Because they had already promoted the match, the pay-per-view match. Like, see, I was going to be like the surprise rundown, and I was supposed to cause Kane to lose or Hunter to lose something. I can't remember
Okay.
what the gist was, but I was supposed to interfere in that match. And I think it was supposed to be maybe for Hunter. Obviously, if I'm going to, if they were had designs for me to work him at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, it
You
feels like
know, I mean,
somebody involved kind of knew maybe this is an odd idea, maybe this
or it was
and
a
just
last minute, like the way I try to rationalize it is maybe some half-ass last minute thing that they did. And I don't know. And I think that's part of what I started to see when Johnny Ace came over from WCW, because I'm
Yep.
just not a Johnny Ace fan.
Oh, well, right. Yeah.
I mean, I the stuff I had seen with him, fortunately I didn't have a lot of dealings with him. I was leaving WCW when he got there, but I
Yep.
just heard from people he's not a good guy.
Yep.
He's a liar. Don't trust him.
Yep.
There was already that kind of talk going on. And then he came to WCW or left WCW and came to WWE. And at that time, I think he was just like an agent.
Yeah,
And then
right.
somehow he got into JR's spot, which I have no idea how that happened. I mean, that's higher up. That's above my pay grade on how and why that happened. I have no idea. But I know a lot of people were just like they couldn't believe it. And I like I said, I just had heard a lot of stuff and from people that had dealings with him that were just not good. And even through my experiences with, I felt like he just bullshitted me the whole time we had any interact, like, oh man, y'all look great. We want to bring you on these house shows and would never do it. And he just kept, it's almost like he just kept stringing me along. And
It's pro wrestling is such a peculiar business, isn't it? It's there's
yeah.
no business like it. That just
No, and see, I'm not the type of guy that's gonna buddy up with somebody just to get somewhere. I'm pretty much what you see, what you get. If you're a cool dude, I'm gonna hang out with you. I'm gonna want to be a friend. Now I'm not gonna be a jerk or an ass to somebody that I don't like. I'll be, hey, how are you? Da 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 da. But I'm not gonna carry your bags like a lot of guys have done. There's no need to name names. People probably already know some of those guys are. But I'm not, I'm not gonna be that guy that's gonna suck up to somebody just because you can get me somewhere. If you're in a position and you can get me somewhere and you're cool and we click, that's different, But I'm not gonna try to do it just because you can do something for me. And I was and I just that was pretty much just how I handled my business in the back. And I was just like, because you just didn't know who was legit and who wasn't,
And
because
that and
just an example, you could be sitting watching a match on the monitor in the back and you can think somebody is your friend that you're sitting there watching a match with. And you can be like, say it's like Taker and somebody and you can comment on how Taker messed that spot up or something. And it's something that the fans wouldn't notice.
Yep. Okay.
But as a worker, you're gonna notice. And it's not like you were saying anything bad. You said, man, he really effed that spot up, you know?
Yep.
Well, if that person that you thought was your friend was threatened by you, they may go and put a word in that, oh, Scott was talking shit about your match.
All right.
I mean, that's how competitive it was, because there was so many spots on TV.
Right.
So it's like you really didn't know who you could trust, who you couldn't trust,
Yep.
and what you could say. You had to be very careful in what you said and how you said it. And it was such a fine, thin line, because
Yeah.
in your mind you're thinking, like, at least for me, it's like, I'm not saying anything bad about this, you
Yep.
know? And
But
honestly, if you did really mess up, because guess what? We all do it.
yep.
It's not going, oh, he's just a terrible wrestler. I can't even believe he's in the business. How did he even get a job? How did he even get this far? You know, whose wheels are he is he greasing in order to get where he, it's not anything like that. And guys will just take the little, you know, you can be just something innocent like, you know, a headlock or a drop toe hold, and somebody could, you'd be like, oh, he misfired on that one a bit. And somebody will could be that's threatened by you could hear that. They only had to be standing next to you, could hear you saying that and go talk to somebody.
Yeah, such a political business. And
Oh, it's the worst. I've never seen a
it
bunch of
is.
bigger females in my life.
It is so unique.
Yeah, it's like nothing I've ever, you know, that's why it was
Yes.
really hard coming out of like football for me, because like I said,
Yeah.
football was all about it didn't matter if you
Yep.
could play. Coach, especially when you go into the, and especially in the NFL, because I worked out for some teams, and it was like the coach didn't have to like you.
Yeah,
You didn't have to
performance
get
equals
along with them.
success, right?
You could
Yeah, I mean,
actually despise each other.
yep.
But if you could make the plays,
Yep.
you were going to play.
You, opportunity. Yep.
Yeah, they're not going to pull the rug out from under you just because personally they don't like you.
Yep.
You know, and a, but on that standpoint, it's like the players had no say so. And
That's right.
things. It was the coaches. And
Yeah,
in
they could.
wrestling, it was all about there's certain guys had certain connections and they were in certain people's ears. And there's certain guys that could go to Vince and go, I don't like this guy.
Protect their
Fire him.
spots. Yeah, it's
You know?
different.
Or they're
It's
threatened by you, which that happened a lot.
Yeah, so unique. It's such a unique business of
Like I you know, now out on the limb and say this. Yeah, and this is my interpretation. I could be wrong on this. But I don't think Hunter was a fan of mine.
Yeah, well.
Because I would get a lot of people when I would show up at the show, they would mistake me for Hunter.
Okay. Yep.
Like when I come to buildings in WWE, when I got out of the car, they thought a lot of times I was Hunter.
Yeah, okay.
And then, of course, I used the pedigree in WCW.
That
That may be the real reason behind it.
helped. So peculiar, isn't
Yeah, but
it?
again, I was so green and nobody said, like, you know, like, and I didn't know Hunter. I couldn't call him up and go, hey, do you mind if I do this? And I'm like, everybody was like, well, everybody uses everybody else's finish and you're not in the same company as he is.
Yeah, right.
Like, it doesn't matter. And I
Yep.
don't know if that was good advice or bad advice.
Yep.
You know, it was like when I showed up with the Sick Boy character, when I was wanting to expand it, I wanted it to be this multi-personality character
Yeah.
to where I did like a Sybil with
Yeah.
multiple
Yeah, like yeah,
personalities.
multiple, yeah.
And I went to Raven and I said, hey man, what do you think about if I take Sick Boy and some days I wrestle in trunks and wrestling boots and I'm more like a normal average guy, or maybe I show up like dressed in like a suit. And he's like, oh, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
And I did the one thunder with the suit, and I got unbelievable heat from the back for it,
Yeah.
because I didn't okay it to anybody,
Okay.
but I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
I thought Raven was the end all be all of the flock and what we could and couldn't do.
Sure.
Because when I came to the back, Terry Taylor was just hot and like, you, how could you? You got to tell somebody. You got to let us know you're going to do this. Like when people were going. They're screaming at you, going, get the camera off of him. Don't even put the camera on him. Because they didn't know why is he all of a sudden
In the suit.
in this
Yeah.
suit. And that's the peculiarity of the business where you're like, and my nativity
Yeah.
and just not knowing the business and knowing that, hey, I need to go to Terry or somebody in the office and go, hey, this is what I'm wanting to do with the character.
It's so peculiar, right? Because you're labeled a quote unquote independent contractor, but you're not, right?
No.
You're technically under
Well, you
contract.
are when it technically it all benefits the company.
If the company wants you to be, right? Yeah.
You know, because they,
It's
as an independent
weird.
contractor, they don't have to provide health care for you.
Sure. But you can't work for
You
anybody else.
yeah, you can't work for anybody else.
So
You
you're not
can't do,
really
you know, this or
independent.
that, and they control everything you do. That's like when my attorney looked over my contract the first time with WCW, he goes, I if I'm just telling you, and he was a friend of mine, and he goes, from an attorney standpoint and your friend, don't sign this contract.
Yeah.
He goes, they control everything and own everything that you do.
Right. Yeah.
He goes, they're painting with such a broad brush. And I was like, I don't care. You know, I'm like, you don't, I mean, he didn't know the business. Like I, the little bit that I did know,
Yeah.
that, you know, look, this is just, this is my end. You know, as I go up, you can start now, you know, you can have a little more control over what you do. And as you get, you know, years under your belt and you prove yourself and you have a value, then you can start going, hey, I want a little, you know, I want a little more say in this or that, and I want to own the rights to my name.
Yeah.
And now I knew with one thing, if I ever used like using my name, Scott Vick, they can't own that.
Right.
But they could own the likeness.
Yeah,
Like
right.
even if I came up with anything of my like, and that's what's so funny, you know, that whole look that we came up with it, now WWF I could get was or WWE, I keep saying WWF.
That's okay.
They were different because a lot of times they'd come up with a character themselves. Like they did with, you know, a lot of other like a lot of characters. They had a lot
So many
of
guys. Yeah.
so many guys that they would
Yeah.
come in and go, "Hey, we got this idea we wanted to do with you."
Yep.
I get that, but it's my thing is if I come up with this and I present this character and you green light it, I should have some rights to that.
Yep.
You might have given me the platform, TV, to go perform it and get it over. And if it gets over, I should have some rights to it.
Yeah.
Now, I fully understand if they go, hey, look, we want you to be the Minotaur, which is another one of those characters I can't believe
Yeah.
they're like, you're going to
Ooh.
give this guy a shot, but you won't give me
Sure.
one. Now, he predated me,
Yeah.
but they came up with that on their own and they put you in that. Say that character got over huge. I get them wanting, hey, this was our idea.
Yep.
We could have stuck anybody in that pretty much.
Right.
I get that, but a lot, but if you come up with your own stuff, you should have a little more say in that character, and especially with the rights of it, being able to go, because they were so peculiar. I mean, even WCW, Eric wouldn't let us work indies.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they weren't doing a lot of stuff like WWF would do a third party
Yeah,
venture.
bookings. Yeah.
Yeah, and you got paid well for it.
Yep.
But they would do that just trying to build that territory or help with the territory that they were at or somebody they were friends with. And I didn't mind doing that kind of stuff. I never did that with WWE, but Eric wouldn't even let us. I mean, it was very selective on if you could do any house shows with WCW.
Yeah. Well, and you were over in it, right? You briefly, you did make a WCW game, right? You were in the what was the
Yeah,
one?
we did a
W
couple. I think it was
the Revenge, the WCW versus
the
NWO or something
Revenge,
like that.
the Thunder one.
Yeah.
There were a
Sick
couple games they did there.
boys in those. Yeah, that's something,
And then
right?
it's peculiar because I'm in a couple of these WWF ones too.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have WCW and you can get WCW characters, but I'm like, I didn't see any royalties from that. I saw royalties from WCW.
Yeah.
But didn't see any because I saw something where I had this character. People post stuff of video games online that they're playing, And it's from one of the WWF ones, like why I don't even know what the name which one it is,
Yeah,
but
the 2K games or whatever they are.
2K something like
Yeah.
that. They because they had that they I think they were doing at the beginning of that big WCW split up where you could go be WCW guys. But yeah, I mean, you had some of that stuff and though those were good paydays.
Yeah. So no.
But honestly, I mean, WCW didn't even create the Flock. That was all Raven.
Yeah.
And then anything we did off of offshoot of that or doing our own that was all us.
Yeah.
Like there was no creative in WCW whatsoever.
Right. So now WWE, right, owns all that and everything.
Yeah.
So there's no royalty checks coming in for Scott Vick, right?
No.
Any Flock, any Sick Boy, they can use that because they own the rights to
Yeah.
that whatever, the intellectual property or whatever you want to call it. But they're not, I mean, obviously there's whatever they're doing with it, if anything, nothing's coming in for you.
No, absolutely not. And I'm not that I'm not saying that they're doing a ton of it where I should be seeing something,
Right.
but it's like, I know they've used some of those images and likenesses there, and I don't know to what, maybe because I went. I know I was on under contract, I think, once those games started coming out.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and you're not right. You don't have a Legends deal or whatever they call
Nah.
those nowadays. I don't know how it works. But
Yeah, I don't either.
yeah, but since right parting ways with wrestling, what's your world now? Do you do some appearances, some conventions and signings, any other projects in the works? What's Scott Vick up to? Is there anything wrestling related that you're working on?
Like I said, I haven't done, I did a few conventions. The closest thing I have coming up now, I'm doing WrestleCade on November 28th in
North Carolina.
Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
We're having a, there's, yeah, the Flock, we're doing it's going to be Raven, Perry, Riggs, Lodi, and Reese and myself.
That's pretty cool, right? I mean, a little
So we're all
reunion.
going to be there. So we they wanted to get everybody from the Flock, like Horace and Hammer, but yeah, for whatever reason that didn't work out.
But that
But
sounds like they
they
got
got us.
a
We're
good
going to be
chunk
there,
of
and this
it.
will be like a good chunk of it, and this will be the second time we've done something all together
Yeah.
like that.
Yeah,
Which is pretty cool.
and nostalgia is such a thing now, right? It's such a commodity.
Yeah,
People.
especially because I think WWE Vault just did a Rise and Fall of the Flock
Yeah.
not too long ago.
A
So
lot
it's
of
kind
that's
of right on the heels of all this.
Yeah, and there's lots of independent toy companies doing retro figures and this and that. You never know, right? What Sick Boy might pop up in. You never know, right?
Yeah, and I
That's
mean that, like I said, my real big inspiration for me was just that Katie Vick thing, and I really was like, I have never been involved in social media up until about a month ago.
Yeah.
I never had a personal Facebook, never had Instagram, nothing.
Yeah.
But I always had people going, "Man, you should do it. You should, Like there's still interest, and I mean, I
It's
always would get people saying stuff, or I get letters, fans would send me stuff, and I would get like cards to sign
Yeah, I mean, social
and
media is a
things, and I always
commodity
knew
now,
that there
right?
was something, huh?
Social media is such a commodity now, right? A chance to
Yeah,
market
and that's what I
stuff.
was saying. Friends of mine were going, you should really use it, like
Yeah.
just use it. And I was always like, I don't know, I'm not about that spotlight like that in terms of like, I didn't want to be the guy. I didn't care if people recognized me when I was going through airports or out and about. I just, I tried to be unrecognizable. I had my hat on and put my hair up, and I was just like, I'm not, I just didn't do it for that. It was
Yeah.
like, like I said, I looked at the whole business as the art,
Yeah.
as a science, and I loved the being able to work and put on that, to spend that reality.
Sure.
To
Yeah.
spend it and make people think, hey, is this guy really hitting this guy? Are these kicks landing? Is this real or not? That was the real drive for me, not being like recognized. I mean, I'd had that through football, and even through that, it's like, yeah, it's flattering, but it's like that's not my drive for anything. So I just looked at social media as like, I don't want to promote, because all I saw on that, especially at the beginning of social media, before it started really turning into like people using it for business and things like that, I just looked as I saw people posting what they ate for lunch, and I'm like, I don't give a crap what you ate for lunch. It's like, oh, I just finished this course in school, and I'm so proud of myself. And I'm like, what do you need? 300,000 likes or 20 likes? I just didn't get the self-accolation like that. And I was like, I don't need it. And it was a turnoff for me, until it started really looking at it going, and then people started using it for business. And I go, I might as well. I'm sitting here at 52 years old, and I'm like, if I'm ever going to do anything, might as well get back in it. And the Katie Vick, like I said, was really the catalyst for pushing me even further into that. And people were just like, look, you can still get out there and do these conventions. You can make some money. People, there's still an interest there. And a couple of friends were like, yeah, as soon as they started doing some of the, like one convention and people kind of knew you were back in that thing, they're like, oh, they're hitting me up to do all these conventions now. And I'm like, it's cool. And to go give back to the fans and to go out there and give that opportunity, because there's still a lot of people that that are fans of the flock
Yeah,
and
definitely.
fans of just that, even just that period,
Yep, absolutely.
because it was just so hot. I mean, that was the hottest wrestling had ever been. Other than like, you had like those mid-80s with the Saturday night main events and stuff with WWF and stuff. But even as high and as hot as those were, the rock and wrestling with MTV and that crossover that WWE did with them, I don't, nothing was as hot as the NWO and then going into the Attitude Era with WWE.
And definitely, and Scott Vick slash Sick Boy is a brand, right? And you're entitled for your work. You should go out there and cash in a little, do a little bit,
No,
and
it's just that, yeah, it's like, it's always good to make, if you can make some money from it,
absolutely.
it's good. But it's also just like I said, I think a big part of it is, there are people that are very interested. Like I said, I get a lot of letters, from people, and I was like, it's good to see some of the boys again, obviously, and get out on that and do that and reminisce and hang out and give people an opportunity that didn't get an opportunity to have any interaction with us, that to have that time, whether it's just signing something, taking a picture. Because ultimately at the end of the day, I mean, it's the fans that allowed me to live the life that I left for so many years and set me up for future stuff.
So where it stands right now, does WWE own the rights to the name Sick Boy?
As far as I know,
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
I've done
That's what
house
I
shows
assume.
under that name, and I
Yeah,
don't think I'm enough big enough like
they're
little speck on on the radar. I'm a small blimp on that radar. I really don't think they care if I go out there. It's not like I'm sitting there making millions of dollars
That's
using that name,
right.
and they're going, "Hey, we need a cut of that."
That's right. Well, because I was just thinking it would be great to see whatever they call it, but I see a Sick Boy figure out there, a retro figure and everything. And there's lots of, like I said, independent companies doing that kind of stuff. You never know what's going to
Yeah, no,
happen.
I mean, yeah, obviously, I mean, I that would be really cool, and seeing some of the ones that they've done figures of, I'm like, oh, come on, I think there would be like a good niche there for a whole flock thing,
It would, yeah, it'd be cool, right?
as
Because,
opposed to obviously a lot of the guys had their individual stuff, but to do it as a collective flock,
yeah, because I know
which I
what.
do know that there's a video game that they're doing that that's it's not, it's more the art. I don't know what you call it. it's not as realistic as like, you know, what they're putting out now.
Yeah.
I've gotten a draft up a mock draft of what they're wanting to do with just not me, obviously, it's a lot of other guys.
Yeah.
But you know, there's some of that stuff going on, and of course the next step would be, yeah, be really cool to get into, you know, some action figure stuff.
Sure. Yeah, well, here's hoping, right? I hope we see a lot more Scott Vick out there. And it's a good time, right? It's because nostalgia sells. There's a lot of markets out there to do that. And I do hope we see Scott Vick out there more in, you know, action figure t-shirts,
Well, we
appearances,
might, you know,
whatever it may
hopefully.
be. There's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, I could, you know, I could definitely do on my own if there's some traction on there, get
Absolutely.
some merchandise, because I've had people asking for t-shirts or hats.
Sure.
Actually, somebody was asking about, be really cool,
Yeah.
do you have any hats? A friend of mine
Yeah.
said that a bunch of people had asked him if I'd had any hats or merchandise, and I'm like, well, I've got to generate something first. I need to set a foundation
Yeah.
and kind of build, you know, build and go from there. But there's, you know, hopefully definitely some opportunity there to grow from and to do.
Yeah, it's a good time for it. So let's wrap this up. How, if fans want to keep track of Scott Vick, Sick Boy, and see maybe things that might develop in the future, who knows? What's the best way? I know you said you're kind of new to social media, but is there a way for them to kind of follow you to keep track of what might
Yeah, you can get
develop
me
in
on
that?
Facebook, and now I'm not under Sick Boy. I'm under Scott Vick on
Yeah.
Facebook,
Okay. Yeah.
but I'm under Scott Vick on Facebook, and then I'm on Instagram as Scott Sick Boy Vick WCW WWF.
Okay, there you go. So give him a follow. If anything develops, whether it be merchandise, appearances, whatever it might be, you can follow those, and I'm sure Scott will share those, and you can hit him up. Again, it's a wild new world out there. You never know what might Scott Vick, aka Sick Boy, might show up. You never know whether it be an action figure, whether it be a T-shirt, a signing, a trading card. Who knows? It's a wild world out there. Scott, it's been great to talk to you. I'm a big fan of Raven and the Flock and all you guys did and everything else. And I absolutely appreciate you were very candid. And I appreciate that, right? Because a lot of guys try to kayfabe you, to, you know, give you a little bit of bullshit and whatever else. But you were very frank, and I do enjoy, I do appreciate that. So that's what makes the stories truly interesting. And I do hope to see you more active out there in the appearances and merchandise world. And if that develops, maybe you and I can cross paths again, do another appearance, or excuse me, another appearance on here, another talk, you know, plug some merchandise or whatever might develop. Because you got a lot of stories to tell, and we told some of them, but I'm sure not all of them here today.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for the opportunity to come and tell some of that, and pushing out there the potential of what may be for down the road for myself, for the character Sick Boy. And you know, hopefully things will transpire in that direction. And
Yeah, it's a big, exciting world out there. Like I said, nostalgia sells. So it's pretty cool to think of the possibility of
yeah, and it's
what might
and
be.
for me, it's like, you know, I've always, like I said, since I've been out so long, I think that will hopefully be a draw to people in terms of, you know, that you've talked to a lot of guys for years and years and years, and here's somebody that's kind of been out of it, that was there,
Yeah.
you know, during the height of the time and had enough of a platform. I didn't accomplish everything that I wanted to accomplish in wrestling, but had enough to where
Sure.
there's interest there. You know?
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about how unique of a business wrestling is. And it's also unique from the fan side because fans have a very deep, broad memory of guys that are involved in the businesses and their favorites. And they don't have to be the biggest to have made an impact. And a lot of guys, I'm sure, appreciate what you did for the business and what you've given for the business, or are fans of the Flock, or fans of Sick Boy.
Well, I appreciate it. And I'm like, And like you said, I'm always going to be very candid in what I talk about.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna BS and sugarcoat anything.
That's
You
very
know, I won't
refreshing.
intentionally throw people under the bus, but I'm gonna, if it's the facts, it's the facts. At least from what's been told to me,
That's right.
I have no problem
Well,
saying, you know, hey, because that's not really how it should be, you know.
yeah, I mean, again, there's plenty of guys I've talked to who, you know, give me the kayfabe story because I don't know what it is. I don't know if they're hoping to get a job,
Well,
hoping to
you
get a
can't. Yeah.
payday.
Well,
I don't
listen.
know.
At this point, I'm. You know, come on. And there's no kayfabe in the business anymore. I mean, that got
Right.
exposed as soon as they started showing all the secrets on TV of how the
Yeah,
business
I
happens
know.
and what's like, especially with WWE when they did the whole, what was it, Tough Enough?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that really just cracked that little crack wide open.
Yeah. And yeah, but like I said, I've had guys still try to keep me and I, you know, whatever. You know,
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I guess that, I don't know, that energy. I don't know what do you, but it's like, it's tough to do an
Maybe they have
interview.
more to lose. I got nothing to lose, man.
Whatever, but it makes for a
And
more interesting conversation.
it's just the truth. That's the thing.
That's
I'm like
right.
I said, what you see is what you get. I'm going to tell you what I think my
That's
thoughts are on
right.
things and why things
Sure.
may have happened and try to, to me, it's just more interesting that way. I'd rather hear that than just the same old gobbledygook.
Me too. The whole reason, right, is just I want to hear stories. I wanted to hear some documentation of what occurred. I don't need any, you know, bullshit or whatever. Just talk. Just tell me the
Yeah.
stories. What do you got to lose? But I do appreciate, right, how candid you were. It made for a
All right,
very
cool.
fun conversation, very entertaining conversation. And again, right, you have a lot of stories to tell. And you know, hopefully, again, I hope a lot of fans can appreciate what you accomplished, what you did, what you contributed. I do hope some more opportunities to get more engaged with the business come to you because it should.
Yeah.
And
Well, I appreciate it.
yeah.
Hopefully it will.
Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
Available on all streaming platforms. It's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course, all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
All right, and thank you to Sick Boy, aka Scott Vick. Thank you to Scott for coming on the show and doing that interview. Guys, be sure to follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much all the platforms. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty, and you can find me. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my various podcasts. Make sure you also do subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform you prefer. Go check out all the WrestleCopia Network podcasts. You can find the individual shows on your favorite podcast platforms, or you can visit WrestleCopia.com.
Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit classicwrestling.net to sign up for your account and then download the app onto all of your smart devices. Now, next episode, my guest is scheduled to be former Midwest manager and wrestler Bunny Love. We'll talk about her husband Paul Christie, Dick the Bruiser, and much more, so be sure to subscribe and not miss an episode. All right, guys, thank you once again for listening. Thank you for supporting. Thank you for subscribing. And always remember, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.